This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Prison reform has become an issue that people on many parts of the political spectrum are willing to consider and advocate for. An article for Bridge, the online news service of the Center for Michigan, says the state had a prison population of more than 43,700 in 2013, the most recent figures available. The question is who among those prisoners should be released. Ted Roloffs wrote the stories for Bridge on prison reform. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
So that number of 43,700, maybe more than that now, depending on what's happened to the prison population in the last couple of years, is there some sort of general consensus amongst people who may see the world very differently otherwise that that's just too many people in prison in Michigan?
I could say yes and no to that. I think there's an emerging level of consensus that hasn't been there before, that we have too many people in prison in Michigan. It's not unanimous. If you talk to the Attorney General, Bill Schuette, he's still pretty adamant that it's a public safety issue. The people that are in prison are there because they've committed serious crimes, and that public safety should always be the top priority. So he's been generally resistant to a lot of the reform ideas that have come about. But, you know, in the last couple, 3 years, there's been an emerging consensus among a variety of surprising figures in the Republican side of things, that not just in Michigan but nationally, that our way of approaching crime and punishment hasn't worked, that we're spending too much money on incarcerating people and not looking at alternatives to putting people in jail or prison. So that's kind of where it stands.
Is there anybody out there that puts out a number that says, you know, if we were doing things right, our prison population would be X?
Well, there is a group that works pretty much 24/7 on prison reform in Michigan that issued an analysis, I think it was a couple months ago, and they had a dizzying number of recommendations, something like 24 changes in sentencing practice and all sorts of things, parole and probation changes, that ultimately added up to 10,000 fewer prisoners if you adopted all those measures. Now, politically, at this point in time in Michigan, that's more of a fantasy than reality. But I think when I looked at this issue, and it's enormously complex, I keep going back to, I look at the numbers. People in prison in Michigan in 1985 was about 18,000. 10 years later, that went to 41,000. That's in only 10 years. It reached 51,000 in 2006, and now it's come back down to where it seems to be sort of hovering somewhere, you know, a little bit above 40,000, 43,000 or so. The population in Michigan obviously did not go up 2.5 times between 1985 and 1995. I mean, basically, the population in Michigan is remained relatively flat going back to 85 compared to the prison population. So I kept asking myself, why do we have nearly 3 times the people in prison that we did back in the 80s? And I know some of the reasons why: the changes in legislation and more aggressive prosecution, war on drugs, all that happened. But it still is hard for me to wrap my head around the idea that we have so many more people in prison in Michigan, and this is true in other states as well, than we did back in the 70s and in the 80s. So I think that, you know, it's also at some point, especially when states have tight budgets, you ask yourself, in Michigan, can we afford a $2 billion annual prison budget, which is pretty much what we have in Michigan right now? And part of what I looked at, it's not a big part of the prison population, but in Michigan, and these to me are just numbers, you can ask the question, and there's different answers, but there were 67 people in prison for failing to pay child support, 277 for passing bad checks, 515 for shoplifting. Now, you can go back and forth on putting people in prison for failing to pay child support. To me, it's pretty hard to make an argument that someone that doesn't pay child support is a threat to public safety. This seems to be a punitive thing. And you could also say, well, he's in prison for failing to pay child support, so obviously he's not going to be paying child support while he's in prison. And in fact, you've reduced the likelihood that that individual, when he gets out, is ever going to be able to pay child support because of his prison record. So these are just questions you raise, and there's different answers to them, of course.
Is it just as simple, though, as saying, let's find everyone in prison who's a nonviolent offender and releasing them into the public?
Well, no, it's not that simple, and I don't know that serious reform advocates say that what we need to do is just go through the entire population and arbitrarily release a lot of people. It has to be changes in sentencing practices. It has to be looking at how the probation and parole system is enforced. Do you want to send people back to prison if they're on parole or probation and they commit some sort of technical violation of their parole, and therefore we're going to send them back to prison when that technical violation is, again, maybe a minor crime or something as small in some cases as failing to indicate a change in address, missing appointments? Do we want to reincarcerate people for violations like that?
So if we're going to send fewer people to prison to start with, what are some of the ideas out there for perhaps alternatives, things that could be done instead of jail time that might still serve as some sort of a corrective measure for someone who has committed a crime or been convicted of it?
Well, I mean, those alternatives include, in some cases, I had a retired circuit court judge that this to me was pretty interesting. He did for, I believe it was his master's thesis, a project where he analyzed all the people that had come before his court in the course of maybe it was 15 years, looked at every single case, and found that I think 70% of the people that he sentenced, their crimes were somehow drug-related. And by that, he means not just the person selling drugs, that sort of thing, but that the person had some kind of a drug problem, seeking drugs, committing a crime in order to get money, to get drugs. And his point was that we have a disease problem in these cases, not necessarily purely a criminal problem. And what we're doing right now isn't working. So he would advocate a much broader treatment, substance abuse treatment for people in order to prevent them from committing future crimes. But of course, that's something that would take, to do it on a significant scale, would take a big investment of money. And again, politically, it's the kind of thing that's going to be very hard to sell to people, that we've got this criminal and we're not going to send this person to prison. We're going to send them to treatment. And that's not always an easy sell. But as the article indicated, I think the most significant opportunity for reform is arising at this time, because you've got a lot of people coming from the political right saying we've got to do some things different because what we're doing now isn't working. It's too costly and it's not necessarily making us safer.
When you break down these statistics by race, what do we see about how white defendants and African-American defendants and perhaps other minorities, Hispanic, may be treated differently in the criminal justice system in Michigan?
The disparity is pretty eye-opening in the rate at which Hispanics and African-Americans are incarcerated. I think it's on the order of 3 to 4 times more in proportion to the population. And that's not at all unique to Michigan. You're going to find those same kinds of numbers across the country. And that gets to be, again, it's a very complex issue. To say it's as simple as, well, it's not simply we're discriminating against African Americans because we want to incarcerate more of them. You're going to also find, in many cases, you've got people living in much higher crime neighborhoods, and that's where police enforcement efforts are focused, and that's how you get more people wrapped up in the criminal justice system. But it's an open question as to whether or not justice is always fair and always blind in these cases.
One of the things you tell us in the article is that Michigan's prison population is aging, bringing with it added costs. A 2013 report by the House Fiscal Agency finds that the percentage of inmates in their 50s and 60s more than tripled between 1994 and 2002. What are the implications of that for the criminal justice system and the cost in Michigan? And what are some ideas that people have about someone who might have been in prison for such a long time that they really aren't really ready to go out and just sort of be dropped into the public on their own?
Well, it's as the prison population gets older, it gets much more expensive because we're paying for their health care. This is the Senate Fiscal Agency from 2010. Average health care cost for prisoners 35 to 39 is $4,800. That goes to $9,000 for those 50 to 54, $16,000 for those 65 to 69, $40,000 for those over 80. So the older the prisoners get, the more expensive it is to keep them there to pay for their health care. And as the portion of prisoners gets older, you can see what's going to happen to the expense. There is a state representative who has now left office who worked on prison reform for some years, Joe Haveman out of Holland. And he had talked about, and this never came to fruition while he was in office, but looking at maybe releasing some of the geriatric and sick prisoners to a facility that would be outside the scope of the prison system, where much of their cost would then be picked up by Medicaid. There's a program like that that started, I think it was last year or the year before, in Connecticut. So, again, this is the kind of thing where you can look at, ask these philosophic questions about people in prison into their 70s and 80s, and they may have been there 40 years or longer. Is this, again, a matter of, is this a punitive decision that we're going to keep you in this prison until you die, and we're going to pay however much it costs to keep you in prison until you die because you did something we don't like? In many cases, this might have been murder 40, 50 years ago. Or do we look at a person at the end of their life and realize that person is absolutely incapable of posing any risk to society? Are there other ways of dealing with this?
So I have to note that the first comment that comes after your story on the Bridge website says, whatever is decided, the fingers will be pointing and accusations made about poor decision-making when an early release prisoner commits murder or some other serious crime with a lot of I told you so's.
Uh-huh.
And I have to wonder if anybody you talked to expressed some concern that could be the way it plays out, that we make prison reform, somebody gets out, they do something terrible, and the reaction by the public is, how could you have let that person out of prison to commit this horrible crime?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a valid point. And some of the people I spoke to do acknowledge that, and they would also say, at least the reform advocates, that if you're serious about reform, you have to be willing to make change, and there's no guarantee. And that is a possibility, and it's a possibility that if something like that happens, that it will be widely politicized. Of course, that's a possibility. However, I think in the long run, if people are serious about reform, you move forward despite that possibility, because, I mean, ultimately, there's no guarantees in anything. I mean, you could make that argument given the way things are right now, and someone's let out of prison, let's say, at his minimum sentence date, and then 2 days later commits a horrible crime. Well, the parole board should have kept that person in prison longer. They should have had a crystal ball to know that person's going to commit that crime 2 days later. So there's never any guarantees.
Ted Roloffs, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to do it.
You can read Ted Roloff's stories for Bridge on prison reform through a link at our website, wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.